I like to move it, move it.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to I Like to Movie Movie. My name is Dan Scully. I'm flying solo today. We're doing a quick bonus episode just to recap some of the best movies that I saw at this year's Fantastic Fest. This was my first time attending Fantastic Fest in person, and let me tell you, it was absolutely incredible. I had so much fun. Austin is such a great city. I love the little scooters that they have that you drive around the city on. That's the best. I loved the Alamo Drafthouse. They really do things right there. I feel so spoiled by how good the movie-going experience is at the Alamo Drafthouse because in Philadelphia, the theatrical experience leaves a lot to be desired on account of the fact that people love to act like fucking animals when they leave their house. But what's cool about Alamo Drafthouse is the seats are very comfy. They mask the screens. The sound is fantastic. The projection is fantastic. And you got a little button on your seat. And you can press that button and then write a little note and put the note next to the button. And then a waiter or waitress will come by, take that note, and then bring you whatever you asked for. And if one of the things that you asked for is for the person in the second row to put their goddamn phone away and shut the fuck up, they will kick that person out. Now, granted, I did not see this occur at the festival, but I did use the button to order a variety of different items, such as flatbread pizzas, chicken fingers, and beers, all of which were delicious. A shout out to Pint House Electric Jellyfish Hazy IPA, I believe is the name of it. It was an incredible beer, and I had more than a few of those throughout the course of the festival. But thank you, everybody who is listening now, for putting up with us during our short break. Steven and I will be back for an episode in a few days in which we will be doing Movie Movie's first redux, meaning we're going to be revisiting a movie that we've already covered on the show. Those of you who have been with this show for the entire decade, or those of you who have just gone back and listened to them, you will know that our very first episode was on The Shining. It was a conversation that former co-host Garrett and I had on a separate podcast that about The Shining, and someone said, hey, that's the podcast I want to listen to, is you guys talking about The Shining. So that's what we did, and that's where the show was born. But now, Steven's co-hosting, and he's not much of a horror guy, but what he fails to understand is that horror is a much wider berth of a genre than I think he's giving it credit for. And much in the same way that Garrett went from someone who didn't like horror to someone who is really enamored with it, I hope to do the same for Steven. And so we are going to, for Halloween, do The Shining, followed by Dr. Sleep. So we're going to hit them both back-to-back episodes, and then we'll have some more fun stuff before the end of the year. But that's going to be our Halloween programming. If you want to hear it, make sure you follow everything at moviemoviecast.com and you check out my website, scullyvision.com, where you will see plenty of capsule reviews from Fantastic Fest. You're going to see plenty of coverage coming up in the near future for the Philadelphia Film Festival, which is coming up in a few weeks. A couple guest posts from friend of the show, Andy. He's going to be providing some extra material during the festival. And yeah, a lot of really great stuff coming up. But yeah, let's get into it. I had, oh my God, I can't even tell you how much fun I had at Fantastic Fest. It's just such a good festival. The ticketing service left a little bit to be desired, but the schedule is so broad that they really I got to see everything that I wanted to see. And, you know, it took a little hassle to do it, but it was worth it. And the experience of watching movies at just the absolutely beautiful theater was second to none. So big shout out to Alamo Drafthouse, big shout out to Fantastic Fest, and a big thank you to both of them for putting on this festival and for, you know, providing me with the press access. I did not expect to be approved. I assumed that this festival was of a much higher pedigree than what I am working at, but maybe I'm not giving myself enough credit because they hooked it up and it was absolutely fantastic. The movies were all great, except for one. I did not much care for Pet Sematary Bloodlines, But I very much care for the swag bag that they gave out at Pet Sematary Bloodlines because it came with a trucker hat, and it's a trucker hat that looks really good on me. And hey, the movie's very well directed. But enough of that. We're not talking about the worst of the fest. We're talking about the best of the fest. I have five movies here that were my favorites from the fest, and I just want to talk about them a little bit, give a couple minutes to each. The first one I don't have much to say about, but I have to shout it out. Fans of this show know that I love the VHS series so much. I love anthology horror films. I love found footage films. And the combination of anthology and found footage simultaneously like scratches the itches of the other. Meaning the problems inherent with found footage, namely, why are you still filming? And the problems inherent with anthology, namely, it's usually defined by the worst entry, is kind of solved by the other. Being an anthology, none of the segments stick around long enough for us to really question why they're still filming. And being found footage across the board keeps a house style that prevents any one entry of the film rising too high or sinking too low. So you get like a nice steady feed across the board. And this has been pretty standard with the VHS series. But one thing that I think's been missing, at least since the second entry, and now granted, I love them all, but the first two VHS movies are downright scary. They're scary movies. The rest have more of a novelty feel to them, where they do interesting stuff, thoughtful stuff, gruesome stuff, but it's never been very scary. VHS 85 is a return to form in that sense. Very scary, also very novel. And I think that each of the filmmakers does a little bit to expand what can be done within the found footage framework. Most notably, Scott Derrickson's entry is one where we're seeing a police investigation where a police officer or detective is receiving videos of murders before the murders happen. And the way that these predictive tapes are sort of integrated into the whole tape that we're watching as the framing device is very clever. The dude I was sitting with during the movie that I was talking to after was not a fan of the way that they did that. And I understand that. I am somebody who, if you break the found footage framing device, it upsets me a little bit, or it just like it'll take me out of the movie. And whereas I think this stretches it, it doesn't stretch it to a point of breaking. I would say that it expands upon it, but that's just me. Your mileage may vary, and luckily for you, VHS 85 will be available on Shudder 2 days after this is recorded. So October 6th. I don't know when the episode's going up, but I think it's going up tomorrow, so I'm going to say that you can watch VHS 85 on Shudder tomorrow. But yeah, Mike Nelson, Gigi Saul Guerrero, Scott Derrickson, and I want to shout out the other filmmaker too, but I'm not going to know their name off the top of my head. But every segment really kicks ass. So, you know, we'll just VHS 85. Did I say 84? It's because that's when I was born. 85. Oh, David Bruckner, Natasha Kermani. Yeah, Mike P. Nelson, Scott Derrickson, Gigi Saul Guerrero. I couldn't even say that any one segment was the best because all of them were very good. So my first entry of Best of the Fest is VHS. The next one is a film called Eileen. And Eileen was actually a movie I did not plan on seeing. It didn't pique my interest at all. But after the first screening, there was sort of a buzz about it. And I overheard some people saying, oh man, I liked that movie, but I did not expect it to go where it went. That to me is like candy. Knowing that something surprising is going to happen. And I gotta say, Eileen did not disappoint in that regard. I will not spoil, though. Don't worry. But so this is, let's see, written by Luke Goebel and Otessa Moshfegh. Apologies if I did not pronounce that correctly. Adapted from a novel written by Otessa Moshfegh, which I am definitely going to read on account of how much I enjoyed this movie. Directed by William Oldroyd. You might recognize his name if you saw the movie Lady Macbeth, which, at least in my world, is what put, excuse me, Florence Pugh on the map and is a, ooh, excuse me again, a really fantastic movie to boot. But Eileen stars Thomasin McKenzie and Anne Hathaway. It's also got my boy Shea Whigham in it. And the plot is pretty basic. Again, I won't spoil, but Thomasin McKenzie is, I mean, I guess this is, I want to say this is the 1950s, maybe the 60s, but it's a time where, you know, we still got a long way to go in terms of women's rights, but this is before we even made the progress that we've made. And Thomasin McKenzie plays a young woman who is caring for her alcoholic, PTSD'd former cop father and ekes out her days working a level of security at the local prison. And she's obviously very repressed. She has a lot of sexual fantasies, but she doesn't really have a way of expressing herself because that's just the circumstances of her life. And then Anne Hathaway shows up, a new psychologist for the prison. And she is a very confident woman. It's not outwardly written, but she would definitely be considered a feminist, especially in this era. And she smokes, she drinks, she dances, she's haughty, she does not really, and she's educated, she's smart. She is everything that Thomasin McKenzie's character would want to be. And in addition to that, she finds herself attracted to her, and the two of them form a fast friendship. And yeah, that's actually all I can say. At first, I was a little bit off put because, like, it is a Christmas time movie. It has cozy East Coast vibes. There's like a chilly sexual tension, but there's like an undercurrent of warmth to it as well, which had me feeling like this was a bit of a ripoff of Carol. And it's not that until it reaches a point where it's definitely not that. And this surprising little romance takes a shocking, sinister turn. I don't wish to say more than that because that, what I just said, is essentially what got me in the door. But it's a really great role for both of our leads. Both Mackenzie and Hathaway are just incredible. I mean, they both do great work. It's not surprising, but it was just great to see Hathaway doing something big and brassy and just, you know, like I've always loved her as an actress, and I feel like I haven't seen her in a few years. I mean, I have, but like, you know, I just haven't seen her really get to chew, and here she does, and it's just fantastic. And it was one of those movies that, like I said, I was not really planning on seeing. And ultimately, it became one of my favorites of the fest. So, Eileen, which will be playing for Philly listeners, it will be playing at the Philadelphia Film Festival. So, you will get a chance to see it if you're local before it ultimately releases on December 8th. I'm going to try and see it again. I loved it that much. All right, the next one we're going to do is so it's tough to get into the secret screenings at Fantastic Fest because every cinephile on the planet loves a secret screening. I love a secret screening. I went to a secret screening and it turned out to be Raw at the Philadelphia Film Festival a few years back. They have since stopped doing secret screenings. Oh, for shame, for shame. But there were four secret screenings at this year's festival. I was only able to get into one of them. One of them was Saltburn. I was not able to get into that. Bummer, but it's also playing Philly Film Fest, so we'll get to see that soon and talk about it. Dream Scenario, the Nicolas Cage comedy. That was the second one. I did not get into that. That's coming out soon as well, and I believe is at the Philly Film Fest. The fourth secret screening was Saw X, which I might have been able to get into, but once word kind of went around that it was going to be Saw X. I was like, I'll just go see something else because Saw X literally came out the day after the secret screening and wide release. I'm probably going to go see it tomorrow. But I got into secret screening number three. And admittedly, when they announced what it was, I was bummed because it was a movie that didn't really interest me in any way. And as of this moment, it's one of the best movies I've seen all year. I'm referring to Dog Man. Dog Man is the latest from Luc Besson, the filmmaker behind Leon the Professional, The Fifth Element, Valerian, a variety of other things. But Dog Man might be one of his best. And it's so Caleb Landry Jones is in it. He plays a guy who has a uncommonly strong bond with dogs. So much so that, at least as we enter the story, he lives alone with these dogs in like an abandoned warehouse situation, and the dogs act as his security. And he's sort of like a, he's almost like a mob style character. People come to him for favors, and he will do the favors for them, typically using his dogs as a medium with which to do that. And the film is framed by Caleb Landry Jones's character being having been arrested and is being interrogated by a caseworker. And as she interviews him, he's going back through his life story. Sounds kind of ridiculous, but what I really love about this movie is when they first introduce Jones's character, it's very easy to make assumptions about him. And then this movie, as the story unfolds, humanizes him and gives us a reason as to, you know, why he is the way he is, why he is who he is, and what strange circumstances have placed him into the present day circumstances. What's never really expounded upon is why he has this connection to dogs. It's almost fantastical, but what's so cool about it is they just play it straight. It's not played like he has some sort of magical sway over these dogs. Nobody sees his sway over the dogs as being, you know, supernatural or anything. It's just a fact of this world, and it is what it is. And it's just remarkable. I mean, Jones's performance is, and I don't say this lightly, and I say this as somebody who does use hyperbole a lot, but it's one of the best lead performances I've ever seen in any movie. And Jones has a really unique look about him, and it's one that doesn't always lend itself to a leading man status, unfortunately. But here it is, like the leading man status is absolutely deserved. It is a full-bodied, just deep performance. And I'm not afraid to admit, by the end of the movie, I was in tears because I was so moved by it. And it's beautiful too. It's a movie with a lot of dogs in perilous circumstances, but not a single dog gets killed, let alone even hurt. It's very precious about that. And I think smartly so. And, you know, I don't want to say too much about it, but like, it's just one of those movies that like exists in its own category. When I tweeted about it after seeing it, I said that it felt like Besson doing a Paul Schrader movie, but still making something that was very distinctly Besson. And even that doesn't do it justice, but it is, you know, it's the best description that I can come up with. Unfortunately, I don't know if this is ever going to see a release in the States, partially because I know it doesn't have a distributor yet. And partially because, and I haven't researched this, and I probably should do better about these kind of things, but I just don't fucking care. Besson is a controversial figure, we'll say. I know he has, like, some allegations against him and such. I know a lot of people at the festival were not happy that his film was being showcased. Furthermore, that he was going to Zoom in after the screening to do a Q&A, which was a lovely Q&A. I tend to separate art from artists, and I also just, my method of engaging with movies is one that I don't allow myself to care about the personal lives of celebrities. Plenty of people do, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I'll leave it to them to hem and haw and, you know, discuss and pull apart, you know, the ethics of watching these movies, because, you know, that is an important thing. It's just not what I do. That said, It's just, I mean, it's just a fucking remarkable movie. I was absolutely blown away by it. And, you know, like I said, we can leave all that other shit to anyone else. I would love for more people to see this movie just if just so I can talk about it. But like, there's a segment of the movie that takes place at a drag club, and Jones gives a drag performance as Edith Piaf, and it is heartbreaking, like soul crushing. How good, and like, of course he had that in him. You know, it seems so logical that he had a soul-crushing Edith Piaf performance in him. I never could have predicted it, but it was there. And it's just a truly, truly unique and remarkable film that, you know, it's like a reminder of how easy it is to look at someone and forget about their humanity. And, you know, just a reminder of how important it is to be yourself and to live genuinely and to, you know, to be good, but also to still be cautious and also forgiving, both on account of the fact that humans are humans. And, you know, just Dogman does a really wonderful job with that. It's a fairy tale that plays it straight, and it is just a remarkable piece of both filmmaking, performance. The script is fantastic. The score is fantastic. For a movie that I was not excited when they announced that it was the secret screening, largely because I hadn't even fucking heard of it, I could not believe how hard this movie hit me. And I gave it 5 stars on my Letterboxd. I can't wait to watch it again, and it's not guaranteed that I will ever get to. But yeah, keep an eye out for that one. Oh, you know what? I should say, there was a movie at Philadelphia Film Festival last year that sort of fell into the same category of didn't have American release, so we didn't know if it was going to come out. And it ultimately did come out. It's called Rebel, and it's currently playing in Philly at the Ritz. So yeah, like, definitely check that out, or Landmark, or whatever it is. Very, very, very excellent movie. And now, because it got dark in my room, I'm gonna walk away from the desk because I saw the reflection of a Joker poster in my window and it freaked me out, and I just need to turn the light on, so you're just gonna have to wait for like 5 seconds. Here we go. And I'm back. So, Dogman. And it's fun because every time you type that into a search engine, you get a little bit of dogma before you hit Dogman. All right. Let's go with this next one. It's called River. Some of you may be familiar with an incredible movie from a few years ago called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. And, well, you know, when you search River in IMDb, it just brings up so many things that aren't River, because River is in so many different movies. So Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes was a 2020 film by Junta Yamaguchi. And it was like a sweet-natured, sci-fi-esque, time-travel-y film that was just so much fun to watch. And the follow-up is called River. And what River is a film about a time loop. And it takes place in a dining establishment in Japan. And all of the people currently hanging out at the dining establishment / hotel, as well as the people working at it, and other people on this one city block, find themselves stuck in a 2-minute time loop. Every 2 minutes, everything resets, and everybody goes back to wherever the scene started. The cool thing is, they're all aware that this is happening. So every 2 minutes, everybody gets together to try and figure out just what the hell is happening and trying to get enough information across before they find themselves right back to where they started. And so the film repeats itself in 2-minute segments, sometimes following different characters each time around, as this group of ragtag, very cartoony but very sweet people are trying to figure out what's going on and solve all of their own issues while also trying to break the loop. It is very funny. It is very cleverly done. And it is just so much fun to watch. every reset on the loop is treated as a punchline, and it's not as like technically impressive as Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes, because in that one they try to do it in a single take, and it's a faux single take, I'd imagine, and there's a device which allows them to watch back in time 2 minutes or ahead 2 minutes, I forget how it goes. And so there's like a constant falling of dominoes, but also like everybody's spinning plates visually to make sure that like this is an unbroken chain. Because it's a time loop that resets every 2 minutes, River doesn't have as much of a behemoth act of filmmaking at its heart. But I think that it ends up feeling like less of a novelty as a result and has a little bit stronger character work. Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes feels like a prolonged sketch. And this is not a problem, mind you. It's very good, and I actually kind of want to watch it tonight now that I'm talking about it. River really feels more like a feature, because it's not leaning into a gimmick. But it is using a gimmick, and it uses it very well. And it's just very silly. It's very warm-hearted. Excuse me. I saw it one morning at the fest. It was the first movie of the day. And it ended, and I leaned to the woman next to me, and I said, "That was a crazy one to start the day. This whole day is gonna have its work cut out for it to try and top that." And she turned to me, and she was like, "I think this whole festival is gonna have its work cut out for it trying to top that." And I said, "You know what? I'm in full agreement." River is an absolute joy. And it's just beautifully shot, beautifully acted, and in the middle of a film fest that's a lot of genre films, which by design features a lot of films that are designed to fuck you up and make you feel bad or shock you. This little piece of just like bright warmth is really what the doctor ordered midway through, and I loved it. And this is one like a Time Crimes or like a Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes where it's gonna be a blast to watch this movie with someone who hasn't seen it, just to watch them watch it. And also, I'd like to watch it again, knowing what I know about the plot, because I bet that there's a million different Easter eggs and a million different little things that are going to cause me to rescind what I said about this being like less technically impressive than its predecessor. But time will have to tell on that. But hopefully this gets a release soon, because I would love to watch it again. It's just an absolute joy. I'll put it this way. Had this movie started playing immediately after it ended, not only would that have been thematically appropriate given the time loop aspect, but I would have stayed to watch it again because it's just so much fun to watch. My number one movie of the fest, I'm gonna delay my number one movie of the fest for a second. I'm adding another one into my list here. The Last Stop in Yuma County, it's called. The last, it's of or in Yuma County. The Last Stop in Yuma County. I just throw a real quick thing out there. This is just like one of those plot movies. And all it is a bunch of people get stranded at a gas station diner. And amidst them is some robbers and a whole lot of money. And it very much plays out like a Coen Brothers, Fargo-y sort of thing. But it also has sort of like a mean streak to it, like a Breaking Bad energy. And it does have Richard Brake and Jim Cummings. So, you're gonna it's I mean it's a whole bunch of like really good character actors. Faison Love is in there, Gene Jones, Sierra McCormick, who was in The Vast of Night, she's in it. I can't really say too much. It's just like a great thriller that's really tight. And the filmmakers gave a great Q&A afterwards. I asked them what it was like to work with Richard Brake, and every single one of them said that he was like a dream to work with and the sweetest guy in the world, which makes me very happy because, as we've talked about on the show before, there's no such thing as a movie featuring Richard Brake that's all bad. And this one's all good. Loved Last Stop in Yuma County. I don't know when that one's getting released, but writer-director Francis Galluppi deserves your patronage because his producer sold his house to fund this movie. So hopefully it gets a release and we can all buy a ticket and show them how much we thank them for doing that. But The Last Stop in Yuma County. But anyway, my number one favorite movie of the fest. That probably sounds like shit. Is a movie that, oh God, I hope this gets released. I hope they put out a 4K. I hope that I can see this on the big screen three more times. It's a movie called Strange Darling. Strange Darling is written and directed by J.T. Molnar. Let me make sure I have that correct. J.T. Molnar. It stars one of my favorite actors working today, Kyle Gallner. It also stars Willa Fitzgerald, who I recognized from the Scream TV series, but whose career I will be following with a very, very close eye for the near future, because the performance she gives in Strange Darling is like a once in a lifetime incredible. And Kyle Gallner, I would actually say the same thing about. Strange Darling, the description as listed in the program, also as listed on IMDb, is one day in the twisted love life of a serial killer. This is a film that I can't really say much about because it's a film that plays its cards very close to its chest, insofar as it uses a non-linear narrative. And I would say it's the first time since Pulp Fiction that the non-linear narrative felt like more than just a gimmick. Because even Memento, which I love, ultimately does feel like it's a gimmick. But with Pulp Fiction, it sort of ties into the thematics of the movie, and I think with Strange Darling, it does that as well, and it does it remarkably well. It's a film filled with surprises, and it's a film filled with just some of the most gorgeous filmmaking and ballsy filmmaking, too. There are shots employed in this that linger on certain elements for a very long time. It's a very ruminative film, but it's not one that is at all impatient or slow. It is a real, real barn burner, and it harkens back to the days where indie film actually meant something, as opposed to just, being, like almost like a brand of film. Like it feels like before indie became like a genre in of itself, it feels. Or maybe I'm saying that backwards. Independent now, I mean, independent has always meant like, without studio backing, independently made. This feels like an indie film. It feels, I don't know, there's just something special here. And what's cool about it is I mean, again, visually it's great, performance-wise it's great. Ed Begley Jr.'s in it. What's her name? Barbara Hershey shows up in it. It's narrated by Jason Patrick. I mean, it opens with a Texas Chainsaw-like text crawl with a very terse reading of what's going on, and it's following a serial killer. And this serial killer, on the final day before they are caught, before the murder spree ends, it is gut-wrenching stuff, but it is so smartly written. It's so smartly assembled, and it has a let's see, I'm gonna get the composer's name. No, not the composer. It has a soundtrack. Oh no, what is the artist's name? But it has a score, but it also has like an album soundtrack filled with original songs with lyrics and stuff that all are tied. There are a couple covers in there too. All tied to the film itself, music department. I'm going to get this artist's name because she was part of the Q&A. Oh my God. Oh no. This is really gonna upset me if I can't get it. So you know you're gonna listen to me, Google. Who did the music for Strange Darling? Maya Folick. Maya Folick. And I believe this is what I'm talking. I'm going into Apple Music now. Man, I don't know. I don't know who that is because there's a Strange Darling EP from 2015. I don't think that's who it is. So for Strange Darling movie, let's see what that says. I really should have looked this up. But either way, she did a wonderful job, and it's like, it's something like Why can't I think of the Dustin Hoffman movie? Z-Berg. There we go. Z-Berg is who did it. And yeah, it's like a soundtrack like Butch Cassidy and Sundance or The Graduate. That's probably the best example, where it's original songs and like you could buy the soundtrack of this and it's also just an album from an artist, which if they release it, I will be buying that vinyl. I will be buying two of that vinyl. And it's just a remarkable film. It scratches the true crime itch, even though it's not a true crime. It scratches a horror itch. It scratches a romance itch. It scratches like the I want to see something fucked up itch. It scratches the I want to watch something that is technically proficient itch. It's one of very few movies. I mean, I would say this, River, and Dog Man are the three movies out of the fest that I would call masterpieces, because it is just so well done. And just, oh, and again, this is one that I was like, you know, it's on my schedule. Like I heard nothing about it, and I went to see it simply because it was playing in a slot that I had open. And boy, oh boy, am I glad I did. It just absolutely blew me away. So Strange Darling, keep an eye open for it. If it does get a release, I will update you on that, because I want everyone to see it, because I want to be able to talk about it without having a spoiler alert. But best you read nothing, best you go in blind, and just have your fucking ass kicked by Strange Darling. So yeah, so again, Z-Berg is the name of the artist who did the music, and she did a wonderful, wonderful job. So there you go, J.T. Molnar's Strange Darling. And that was my Fantastic Fest adventure. Again, check out scullyvision.com. I've got plenty of reviews from the fest. A whole bunch of capsules are up, so a lot of good stuff. Again, I had a good time with everything I saw. Some things were better than others. Most things were good to great. So again, huge shout out, huge thank you to Alamo Drafthouse, to Fantastic Fest for hosting me, and for just, you know, keeping everything moving that entire time, because there's a lot of room for discomfort in a hot Texas summer, especially when, you know, the last thing that happened before I got on the plane here in Philly was it got cold. So there was a lot of room for discomfort, a lot of room for stench, and really it was a comfortable and fun situation the entire time. No shortage of stuff to do, no shortage of just pure entertainment, and it's how a festival should be done. It was just beautifully done. I loved every minute of it. So scullyvision.com, at MovieMovieCast on all of the things. Please like, subscribe, tell your friends, do whatever. And also, feel free, contact us on the socials. Let us know if there's a movie you want to talk about, and we will do it. Heck, if you want to talk about a movie, we'll have you on to talk about it. I don't give a fuck. So definitely do that. And we also have a episode of Hot Property dropping this weekend, so check that out at Hot Property Pod. So thank you again, everybody. Thanks for putting up with us during the break. Lots of fun stuff coming up as we close out the season and the year. And yeah, get ready, put on The Shining, watch Room 237, because we're gonna get into it deep on the next episode. So I love you all. Thank you, my little sexies. And yeah, have a good one, y'all.